In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks so much for joining us, and happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday, Brett.
And Brian. And Kelly.
And Kelly.
Whoever
else is in here.
Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I cover tech, and my favorite ever Stan Lee cameo is the one from Avengers Age of Ultron where he plays a World War II vet and Thor gets him drunk. It's really great.
That was a good one. I'm Brian Truitt, film critic and entertainment writer, and my favorite is actually from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, where he hangs out on the moon with the Watchers, because it's kind of meta, because like he's hanging out with the Watchers, he created the Watchers, he created all this universe and everything, and yet he's like telling stories to the Watchers. The Watchers are supposed to be like seeing everything, so it's very meta.
And I'm Kelly Lawler, TV critic, and my favorite Stan Lee cameo is the one from The Amazing Spider-Man, where he's the librarian who doesn't realize that Spidey's right behind him having a big fight because he's got headphones on, which is already a funny scene, but is made that much funnier because Stan Lee is the person who's oblivious.
Is that the only funny part of Amazing Spider-Man?
It's all the good part of Amazing Spider-Man, let's be real.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, I guess they got Gwen Stacy's hair right. That was good.
Well, that's two things. Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go.
Bonus points.
Yeah. If this is your first time listening to us, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership drop every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. If you're on Apple Podcasts, we would totally love it if you could write a quick review about the show. By doing that, you'll help other fans who love nerdy pop culture find our show. As a special bonus, we will give you a shout out on the next episode. Try it out. Tell us when you want to hear from the show. We listen. We appreciate your feedback. It's all great for you. So feel free to tell us what you think. Don't forget, along with leaving a review, you can also get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. You can send an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. This week, we pay tribute to a legend, Stan Lee, the beloved comic books writer who helped create Marvel superheroes like Spider-Man, the X-Men, the Fantastic Four,
Iron Man, Doctor Strange, Black Panther,
and pretty much turned Marvel into this massive entertainment giant that it is right now. Died on Monday at 95. That's who we're going to talk about this week, kind of what Stan Lee meant to us, his legacy, and just, you know, he's made the comic book industry something that's so much bigger now compared to when he started it. So, but let's start with Marvel in general, because obviously, you know, he's responsible for so many of the characters in the Marvel universe. We'll start with Kelly, though. What's your first memory of Marvel and having that in your life?
My first interaction with Marvel would have to be the X-Men and Spider-Man cartoons that were on Fox on Saturday mornings in the late 90s. The ones where Mary Jane had gigantic, gigantic red hair and Wolverine was in his full yellow outfit with barely any eyes. His eyes were just the mask, essentially, that were really the comics transposed, essentially. They were cartoony, as they should be, and they were aimed at kids, and they were really fun. And those are probably... That and then, you know, bringing a little DC into this, the Batman anime series were probably my first interactions with superheroes in general.
That was a really good peak time for cartoons, like comic book cartoons.
Yeah.
Like that Batman animated series was awesome.
Yeah, the Marvel one was seen as okay. You know, I think they helped a lot. But like Batman, the animated series, like influenced like comics and TV and movies and everything.
Yeah. And but though I remember that X-Men cartoon just for the intro. The intro is awesome. I share that from time to time on Twitter. It's just so amazing. My first real memory was watching Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which is a cartoon from the 80s that Brian watched also.
This is also my answer. So,
aw, twinsies.
I know.
Because we're old.
It basically, yeah. So it featured Spider-Man and Iceman and Firestar, and they were all going to college together. And I think they were living together, too. I can't remember if Aunt May was living with him or not. I know they had a dog. So
they essentially had their mom at college.
Yeah, that's true. I think
they went to like Empire State, which is like, yeah, like right next door to like, I guess, Midtown High.
Yeah.
You know,
it was all everything was close to each other. But they, you know, they all lived together and then they all, you know, fought bad guys like Green Goblin. And Stan Lee was the narrator of the show. So that was my first encounter with him, was his voice all the time. And he has a very distinct voice. Like you hear him talk and you know exactly who it is right away. I mean, it's just a very unique voice. And he narrated the show, and so it was always his voice taking you through the series. And I loved the enthusiasm. I loved, you know, just everything about the show was fantastic. It was my first introduction to all these characters, and I'd been used to DC and stuff, especially with TV, because back then there was Super Friends, so it was a lot of the DC stuff. So this was my first real, in terms of, like, cartoon stuff, this was the first intro to Marvel, and it was so cool seeing all these other different characters. They just looked so different and were so cool, and there was just so much to appreciate about them.
Well, and they were street level. I mean, I think that was always the thing about DC characters, other than Batman. You know, the Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, the New Gods, everything is like, you know, kind of come from the skies. They kind of have this kind of like...
almost mythological.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, you know, you Daredevil and Luke Cage and Spider-Man and are more street level. I mean, and The Thing and Fantastic Four, they're taking care of like the folks in New York City on the ground rather than like up in the skies. Mm-hmm.
So... looking at his legacy, I mean, he was with Marvel for a very long time. He's had he created all these incredible characters. How would you best describe Stan Lee's legacy?
I don't think you can. You look at American legends and what America is known for, like jazz and pie, or maybe, you know, those things that are like very, very American. And comic books are one of those things. Comic books are synonymous with Stan Lee. There would not be any comic books or anything without Stan Lee. I mean, he popularized everything. You know, I think Superman and Batman and even Wonder Woman, I mean, they came before, you know, Spider-Man and the Avengers and things like that. But it wasn't until the 60s where, like, superheroes really caught on. You know, it's not like now where, like, you know, superheroes are just everywhere. But it was close to that because, you know, comic books were a thing. Comic books were read by everybody back then. Comic books would not have happened, would not have been a thing without Stan Lee.
And you think about the fact that there wouldn't be so much of DC if Marvel hadn't become such a contender. That rivalry fueled both of them over the years to come up with new creative ideas, to build their businesses, to eventually break into the movie business.
There would be no Fantastic Four without Justice League.
Exactly.
Justice League made them do Fantastic Four and Avengers and X-Men because the superhero team up was a thing.
And we always talk about how Stan Lee was a creator, but eventually he kind of gave up that creative part and went into the business. And, you know, his savvy helped build Marvel.
I mean, he was an ambassador. He was a superhero ambassador. Like Brett was saying, I mean, kind of we knew the voice before we knew that he wrote the things. He became the very public face of Marvel. You know, superheroes were on the page, but he was on the ground. And on TV and, you know, in papers. And, you know, there's that one picture of like of him. It was like almost like the Burt Reynolds, like Playboy naked kind of thing. But it's just like Stan Lee was like almost naked in a rug. But so it's like he had that kind of P.T. Barnum showman vibe back then.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned this, too, when we were talking about that cartoon in the 80s presenting heroes on a street level. It was also the fact that they made all those heroes feel like they were also human beings, too. And so they had a lot of the same flaws that human beings do. They were dealing a lot of the same issues. You know, you deal with Spider-Man and he's a kid in high school and he's dealing with all the crap that he has to deal with in high school. Or he's in college and he's having to take college classes and then he's got to get a job and he's got to do all this other stuff. He's taking care of his aunt and other things like that. And he's a superhero. You have the X-Men who are dealing with issues of acceptance and tolerance and diversity. And
it's a metaphor for race.
Exactly. And there were so many human issues that he dealt with in all his comics, but they were still these superhuman, just incredible characters too. And I think that's why, you know, they've just stuck around so long. They're just so much more relatable.
Yeah, I mean, and Iron Man dealt with alcoholism. You know, he introduced Black Panther. I mean, there was no, like, you know, it was around the time of blaxploitation. And, you know, there was obviously a commercial value to Black Panther putting him in a Fantastic Four. But you didn't have a black superhero, major black superhero before him. Like, X-Men was a metaphor for the civil rights era, you know, with superpowers. Even though people had superpowers, they were different and they were marginalized because of it. And, you know, they felt outsidery because of it. He was very progressive when, you know, the world wasn't.
Again, the other thing he did, too, is I think he kind of paved the way for allowing creators to be more upfront, too, with, you know, it's not just about Batman. It's about Frank Miller. It's not just about, you know, X-Men. It's Chris Claremont. Like, he kind of allowed those creators to kind of have their own voice, too. Independent, and that's where you saw that wave, like in the 90s, where you saw a lot of those guys defect Marvel and other stuff.
I think especially in the past two decades with his cameos in the Marvel films, I think that makes a big difference to people who only saw the movies or who have a very casual interest in this world to know the creator, to know the artist behind the art. In our celebrity culture, we really idolize the people in front of the camera, the singers and the actors, and I think over the past few years, we've started to get more into directors and writers. And I do think Stan Lee is one of the people who is part of that. Becoming a celebrity himself helps other creators become celebrities.
I think writers and artists are like isolating types. They aren't really kind of people who take the brass ring, as it were, and be like, put themselves out there. A lot of people are just kind of like, cool being at home with their typewriters or, you know, sketchbooks and stuff and just kind of doing their thing. Whereas Stan Lee was just like, no, I need to be the face of this. And I think, you know, Batman's awesome, Superman awesome, but it's just like, you know, they were created, but it's everybody who's come after them and Spider-Man too. You know, everybody adds on to everything else. It started with Stan Lee, but then it became, you know, Todd McFarlane. Then it became, you know, other people down the line who added their own stuff to the recipe, to where now the movies take from the comic books of modern comic book storylines. It started with Stan Lee, but it's like it's accumulation of all those artists and all those writers and everything.
Mm-hmm. And there are so many artists who were influenced by him, not just in comics. I mean, you can thank him for a lot of modern comic writers for sure, but I actually was talking to George R. R. Martin for a TV show he has coming out on Sci-Fi later this year. And we talked about Stan Lee a little bit, and he essentially says he was my biggest inspiration. I owe my career to him. He was first published as a kid in a fan letter in Fantastic Four number 20 in 1960-something.
Really? I never knew that.
Yeah. And a lot of nerdy people become creators. And for a long time, comic books were one of the mediums that reached kids the most and inspired them.
And this leads to being the ambassador of comics, who's very accessible, too. You know, again, those letters. And I was seeing stories on Twitter about the people that, you know, wrote to him or reached out to him and how responsive he was and welcoming. And I think that was part of it, too, where, you know, I think he wanted to project the idea of reading comic books and being a part of this was such an inclusive, wonderful, welcoming place. And, you know, that was the thing about him. It was like he was so enthusiastic about the medium, but just his openness and wanting everybody to appreciate it and love it as much as he did.
Well, he was very much into children's literacy. It's sad, but comic books are still looked down upon by a lot of people. Be like, oh, that's just kid stuff. But it got kids to read in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, on. It sparked their imagination. You have to start somewhere. You start with comic books and then you go read Harry Potter. I mean, it was Harry Potter before Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll start with Brian. What's your favorite Stan Lee creation?
I think it's Spider-Man. I think everything's really great, I think. So my all-time favorite Marvel character is Captain America, and he actually brought him back to life in Avengers, early Avengers issues, but he didn't create him. Creating-wise, I think it's got to be Spider-Man, because that is the ultimate Marvel superhero. He is the figurehead.
Kelly, who's your pick?
I almost went with Spider-Man, but thinking of the collective like enjoyment I've gotten out of the character, I went with the X-Men because the TV show was really formative for me. I liked it better than the Spider-Man show. It was better. I haven't watched it in a while, but I imagine it would hold up significantly better than the Spider-Man one. And those movies came out around the same time, but I loved, loved, loved X2. I loved it so much. And I loved the idea that it gave me that, like, you know, maybe I could wake up one day and be a mutant and have powers and have this family. And it was what got me into superheroes really properly. And it is a group that keeps on giving and has the power to, you know, continue to surprise me. They can make as many new mutants in the comics from now until infinity because they just keep being born. And I love that idea. And I love Jean Grey. I hope that they don't ruin her. They're totally going to ruin her. But I love Jean Grey.
I'm with you on X-Men. That cartoon I mentioned earlier, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, that's where I got exposed to X-Men too, because there was an episode where Iceman and Firestar were members of the X-Men, and I think they were doing a reunion or something, and so they had a barbecue, and so all the X-Men were there, and of course the barbecue gets interrupted by Juggernaut, and so they have to fight Juggernaut. But anyway, that was my first exposure to them, and I'm like, oh my god, these guys are awesome. And then a few years later, I'm at a 7-Eleven, and I see an X-Men comic book, and I'm like, oh my god, I remember that, and started reading it. And it was just, they're just such unique characters. You know, it's not like the typical, oh, you're super strong and you can fly and you can do this stuff. Like, you had guys that could shoot like lasers out of their eyes, or, you know, they turned into ice, or they had all this other, these other really interesting, unique powers. But it wasn't just that. It was just, again, it gets back to the reason why a lot of us like Marvel. It's just, they were dealing with real world stuff, you know, being ostracized because of who they were. And especially as teenagers, that's something it's very easy to relate to. So I will stand X-Men all day, every day. So, you know, no matter what.
Well, that's why Spider-Man's so important, is because that whole with great power comes great responsibility. I mean, that's a effing life lesson that everybody should hold, whether you have superpowers or not. It's this kid who, you know, who should be just having a normal high school life, but yet, you know, feels the need because he has these powers to protect people and to, you know, to save others from weird supervillains running around. And it's all because, you know, one mistake cost his uncle his life. And, you know, he always remembers what his uncle said and, like, you know, doesn't want to ever have that happen to anybody.
Do you know something I really love about most Marvel characters, and I think Spider-Man has it particularly, is the sense of empathy that I think is really lacking, A, from our world, and B, from a lot of DC characters, really, except for Wonder Woman, maybe Aquaman.
Maybe.
And I think the idea that these superheroes are helping because they can and they want to, and because people need them, and not because they're broody, and not because they're all powerful.
Or it's a burden.
Or it's a burden, or it's because of their nemesis. A lot of times, Spider-Man is saving people, not fighting his demons. And I really like that. That's what I like most about superheroes. It's why the scenes in Man of Steel where Superman ignores civilians bother me. It's why I don't like broody Batman. I want to feel hopeful and I want to be rescued.
That's why the artist, I mean, in charge of the thing is important. Stan Lee understood empathy. Zack Snyder doesn't.
Yeah.
Part of his legacy is caring about people. And, you know, he cares about people. He is always gracious to anybody, everybody. And then, you know, he passed that on to his characters.
Mm-hmm. So what's the thing you'll remember most about Stan Lee, Kelly?
I'm going to go with the cameos. I think that's the way most of America will remember him and the world, because those movies took him all over the world, which is really cool to think about. I think it was fun and it reminded you of the fact that they did come from comics. And I think it was a great way for someone who worked so hard and didn't always, I mean, he died hugely wealthy and he eventually reaped the benefits of all of his work, but that wasn't always the case. And I think it was amazing for him to be able to see his creations like that. I think about how wonderful it was that Black Panther came out this year and that he got to see it and be a part of it. And that's how I knew his face and his voice. And it will make those movies more special when you rewatch them now.
Well, it's funny because I remember when he first started making them. So this was around the 2000s. He had done some before, but they really started to kick off with the 2000s. So with X-Men movies, Spider-Man, all that stuff. And I remember the first couple times I'm like, okay, dude, we get it. You've made these characters. Please, what are you doing? Stop. But then over time, the more he started doing them, the more I was kind of like, it was nice seeing him, you know,
yeah.
It's like an old friend, like, oh, hey, there he is. And it was more fun. And like you said, now that he's gone, it's like they're more memorable now. And like I was preparing for this, there was a YouTube video of all his cameos and I was watching him and I'm like, oh, man, that's so cool. And, you know, now I feel stupid thinking that it was wrong to do that. It's ridiculous now.
I think I maybe watched the same or a very similar YouTube video to prepare for this. And I totally forgot about him and Lou Ferrigno.
Yep.
In Hulk, the 2003 Ang Lee version with Eric Bana as the Hulk.
And Lou Ferrigno is wearing a child-sized, small, like, officer uniform.
Yes. And I was just like, you know, that movie doesn't have a lot that I love about it, really, at all. But that was such a cool thing that they did.
The other thing that was funny, too, I noticed is, I don't know if it was just the Spider-Man films, minus the one with the librarian, but the early ones, he's always saving someone's life. And it's 2 and 3. There's a scene where I think there's debris falling or something happens and he pulls people out of the way.
Yeah, I think that's Spider-Man 2 when Doc Ock attacks Spider-Man at the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a while, he was saving people. He was cracking jokes. He was being Stan the Man.
He was a mailman. Yeah, it was great.
And I mean, that's like, him. I mean, that's he was just playing himself, literally.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, again, it gets back to him being the face of comic books. You know, not just Marvel, just everything. Brian, what about you? What's your thing you'll remember most?
I think how gracious he was. I got to speak to him probably like 4 times on the phone over the years, and I moderated a panel at New York Comic Con for like a book that he did. Obviously very nice, gracious with his time. I always had time to talk to anybody. That's kind of the thing about him, because even when he had a lot of health problems later in life and, you know, this year, and he always made time to go to Comic Cons, even if he had to like go there in a wheelchair. He, you know, he wanted to see his fans because his fans wanted to see him. And that was important to him. I don't think I've ever seen someone, a celebrity, where, you know, the fans meant more to them than they did to their fans.
Didn't he go to a con right after his wife died last year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He showed up at, you know, Black Panther. I think he was in a wheelchair. At that point, I think he was hospitalized soon after that for something. I think that's the thing, you know, it's like 95 and he still wants to be there for his fans. He can't say enough about the guy.
Listeners, it is your turn. We want to hear from you. What do you remember most about Marvel Comics and Stan Lee? Share some of your memories on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod. You can also tweet at us individually. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
I'm at Brian Truitt.
And I'm at Kalawls, K-L-A-W-L-S.
Don't forget, you can email us too. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. We'll wrap it up here. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to our pilot / producers of the Mothership this week, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to the Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, how about you leave us a rating or a review? It helps other people find the podcast. And we also appreciate the feedback. If Apple Podcasts aren't your thing, you can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere that you listen to podcasts, you will find us. Thanks for joining us. Rest in peace, Stan Lee. Until next week, nerds out.
Later.
Excelsior.